Good morning, good morning, good morning. It's Sunday, the 10th of December 2017. I hope you're well. It's a very cold United Kingdom. It's cold right across the UK. It's been a good weekend thus far. Hope yours has gone well. You are tuned right now to Sunday View live in association with DavidIke.com. Live on DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. A look at the Sunday newspapers, the broadsheets and the tabloids, and one or two other stories as well. Welcome to the programme.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to DavidIke.com/headlines now.
Lovely. And as always, you can tweet the programme. Couldn't be simpler. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Let me know what you're thinking about these big stories on Sunday, December 10th, 2017. Welcome to your Sunday View.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com.
And it is cold. It's very, very, very cold. Very wintry. I was in the city centre last night to see a concert on my lonesome. The future Mrs. Allen is not here. And I was damn glad I drove and didn't drink. And I didn't have to walk into the city centre to get a taxi afterwards. It's cold out there. Right, welcome to the show. Let's get rid of the music. The foreboding music. Been an interesting old morning for me reading the papers today. There's a lot of Brexit material today, important stuff though, in today's papers and right across the media today, television and radio. This is on foot of the deal that Theresa May struck with Donald Tusk on Friday, an agreement on the border between the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, and a deal on the rights of EU citizens here and UK citizens abroad. There's been a lot of contentious talk about the legitimacy of that deal, with many people, including your presenter, believing that that particular deal was all about ultimately keeping the United Kingdom in the single market and the customs union, and ultimately not leaving the European Union at all. You won't be surprised to hear me say that, right? Because that's a tune that I've been playing. That's a drum that I have been banging for some time now. Do bookmark DavidIke.com. A lot of terrifically put together information on the website today and every day. Bookmark it. And yes, well, let's just move on. Before we move on, and before I read the... Well, I'm not going to read the newspapers for you, but before I look at the front pages, there is something I want to get into. I want to have a bit of a personal rant. A little bit of a personal rant to kick off the programme today. Something that I'm very interested in. Vets. Let's kick off the programme out of left field today and talk about vets. Veterinary surgeons and veterinary practices. Right. So about 3 weeks ago, I took our dog Jazz to the vet, which is a vet that's pretty close to where we live. There are a number of vets close to where we live, but there is one we've been using since arriving in this great city. So we took her to a vet. She's had this issue with discharge from her eye. A snotty eye, which hasn't been responding well to washing it out with saline solutions and stuff like that. So a bit of an infection. So I took her to the vet anyway, and the vet had a look at it. They don't spend very long with you or your animal. He had a look at the eye, and he said, "I reckon that's a prescription for antibiotics there." He said, "It's obviously some sort of infection." And I said, "Well, I probably could have guessed that. So what will we do?" And he said, "Well, I will give you a prescription for antibiotic tablets, but also a prescription for eye drops, and you'll get it at reception." So I went out to reception. They dispensed their own medicine, which veterinary people do. They gave me the eye drops and the tablets, and I paid £85, right, for the consultancy and the eye drops and the tablets, 85 smackaroos. And we love our animals. And, you know, I can't afford really to be paying £85 to a vet, but you just do it and, you know, fair enough. You love your animals, right? So come back in a week and I'll have a look at the eye, said the vet. So the eye drops and the antibiotics did nothing for Jazz. They didn't work at all. All right, that happens. The eye didn't improve at all. So I went back a week later, a couple of weeks ago, and he had another look, very brief look. There seems to be a blockage in the tear duct. We'll try another antibiotic. And I said, look, for fuck's sake, was the antibiotic you gave her originally a strong one? He said, yes, it was. I said, well, what are the odds of this one working? He said, well, we'll give it a go anyway. I said, all right, we'll give it a go. So I went back to reception and went to pay, but their debit card machine had just gone on the blink. It was out of order. So I said, well, look, I'm obviously back next week for the vet to see the eye again and to see if this antibiotic has worked. So I can pay you then. I don't have any cash on me at the moment. I'll pay you then. So they said, no problems, to their credit. They said, no problems. Gave me the second antibiotic and I went on my merry way. So Friday, just gone, dear listener, I went back to the vet. The eye hadn't improved and still hasn't improved at all. No better. The antibiotic hasn't worked. So the vet says, 2 minute consultations now. There's a new eye drop, antibacterial antibiotic. It's strong. Give it a go. All righty then, says I with a sigh. Will we ever get to the bottom of this eye? So I go to reception to pay, and as is my style, I reminded them, I didn't have to, they have computers. I reminded them that I had a balance from last week's antibiotic, the machine wasn't working, blah, blah, blah. So she says, all right then, here are your new eye drops, and your bill, including last week, is 86 quid. What, says I? For an antibiotic and eye drops, you want 86 quid? Oh, and your consultation, she says. What, says I? What consultation? What consultation? Show me. Show me the itemised bill. So she gave me the itemised bill. And she said, there you go, have a look. And it was 20 quid, 25 quid in fact, for the consultation on my second visit and 25 quid this visit. So I said, hold your horses there. You can't do that. You can't charge me for seeing the vet for dealing with the same issue. You can't keep charging me for the same problem. Effectively, she's been seen for the eye, there's been an eye issue. I was charged, I think, 50 quid at the time, 45 quid consultation at the time, plus the antibiotic and plus the original eye drops. You just can't keep charging me when he's having a quick look to see if it's been effective. That's gaming. That's gaming me as a client, as the owner of the pet. It's outrageous. And she said, well, it's pretty standard and I'm afraid that's the way it is. Snotty little bitch she was. And I said, well, I ain't having it. It's absolutely wrong. Right? Each subsequent visit has been a follow-up on medication prescribed that didn't work. So she said, he has to be paid for his time. No chance, said I. Absolutely no chance. Redo the bill and charge me for last week's antibiotics and this week's eye drops. Anyway, the vet came out. Nasty little bollocks. Not impressed at all. Nasty attitude, condescending. Had a look at me. I had about 6 days of beard growth at the time. I had a woolly hat on and I had running gear on. Thought I was some sort of scumbag and insinuated that I was dishonourable and that I wouldn't pay my way. I felt strongly tempted to ask him to step outside and to say that out of the earshot and the line of sight of the people in the waiting room. But I didn't. I'm not like that. So I said, you're a fraud, man. And I said this in front of a lot of people. There was a lot of people in the waiting room. You see the dog to diagnose the eye condition We pay 85, 86 quid at the time. We come back, it's not worked, you give us another prescription. You can't keep charging £25 each time. I'm going to find a regulatory authority for veterinary surgeons and I'm going to report you. It's outrageous. So anyway, I loudly insisted that she give me the bill for the tablets. She did. And as I was leaving, the vet had a little parting shot. Don't come back. And at that point, I had to bite my tongue not to turn the air blue. So why are you telling us this, Richie? Well, I had a look into it. And what I did yesterday morning was, I phoned around a couple of vets and spoke to some receptionists on the basis that I was a journalist for a magazine and I was doing an article on pricing. And it seems that vets are gaming the system. They are doing this to people. When they say, well, Rex or Fido or Tiddles the cat or whatever has got pneumonia or conjunctivitis or whatever, here's some medication. When you go back for the checkup to see if the medication is working or not, the fuckers are charging for that visit. Can you believe it? Some of the greediest bastards that ever lived are vets. Don't get me started. And I love vets and dentists. And I love our dog. You love your dogs and your cats. I know you do. And your horses and everything. We love them. And of course, money is no object. You'll find the money to look after them. But vets are greedy. I can't speak for every one of them. But what I'm finding is they're all at this. Enough is never enough with vets and dentists. Gaming the system. Right? Don't get me started with this Dr. Noel Fitzpatrick, this Irish arsehole that's on Channel 4 News all the time. Who might mean well, who might love animals, but why are you charging £6,000 for an operation and £7,000? What, because you're a genius? Are you worth £7,000 an hour or £3,000 an hour? Absolutely monumental bastards are vets and dentists. Let's throw dentists in there. But anyway, I didn't pay the guy. I come from a long line of people who are aware of their statutory rights and a long line of argumentative bastards. So I said, no way, and left. And, you know, in future, we'll have to find another vet to take her. But you might come across that. Just watch out for that. If you have dogs or cats or hamsters or gerbils or whatever the bloody hell you have, bear in mind that this is what vets are doing. And it's outrageous. And I think any letter to the regulatory authority is just going to fall on deaf ears, or any complaint I make will fall on deaf ears, because it seems that they're all doing it. It's disgraceful. If you go to the doctor tomorrow with a chesty cough, if you go private and you pay 40 quid or 50 quid private, when you return, he or she, to see how the medication is doing, they don't charge you again. They can't. It's fucking... Anyway, drove me mad on Friday. There you go. Rant over. Just keep an eye out. Keep an eye on that if you do have a pet. 13 minutes past the hour. This is Sunday View, so let's get to what we came here to do. Let's look at the papers. The Sunday Observer. The headline is, new blow for May as EU gets tough over trade deal. The Observer says that Theresa May's triumphant return from Brussels hasn't lasted long, with a warning in the paper of troubles ahead when it comes to this trade deal, which they're supposedly going to start negotiating with the EU now. The paper reports that the EU is coming under international pressure to deny the UK special treatment or any deal better than the terms they receive. Now, of course, the Observer is unashamedly pro-Europe. Of course, you've got to realise that when you read it. And it's a bit silly, obviously. There won't be good terms offered to the UK with respect to a trade deal unless the UK says, well, OK, free movement of people, we will allow that. Otherwise, there won't be a good deal. They have to scare other countries, does the bureaucratic tyranny in Brussels, right? In other words, make it so bad that the people of other countries don't rise up against it. Here's an interesting front page. This is a big story. This is the big story today. The Sunday Telegraph, Cabinet Brexit truce threatens to unravel. Yes, are you tired of it? I hear you. Because you tweet me and you sometimes email me, oh, Richie, I'm Brexit. Right, I know, but it's massively, massively serious, this, in light of what's coming out of Germany, Martin Schulz and the Federal United States of Europe and the European Army. It is important that we keep talking about this. You know, and I do try and balance it up with other items and other articles and other stuff, which I do, but we have to talk about it. Sunday View is about the Sunday paper, so we're talking about it. So, Cabinet Brexit truce threatens to unravel. Sunday Telegraph. This is about the deal between the UK and the Republic of Ireland through the European Union, over the border. So, when the UK leaves the European Union, to prevent a hard border, right? Because the UK through Northern Ireland will then have a land border with the European Union. Once the UK is out, it has a land border with the Republic of Ireland, which is in the European Union. Now, Northern Irish citizens and the Republic of Ireland neighbours were obviously very nervous about a hard border and customs and all of that, levies and taxes and all of that. Why wouldn't they be? Stands to reason. So a deal was done late last week, signed off by the Irish government in Dublin, acting on behalf of the EU and the Democratic Unionist Party, who are loyalists, of course, in the north of Ireland, and the UK. They all did a deal, and it all looked very good for Theresa May on Friday. Now, here's a little paragraph from today's Sunday Telegraph. A clause in Friday's agreement pledging full alignment, very important phrase, full alignment, between the UK and the EU if no alternative deal is reached, was key to signing Ireland up to the deal after Dublin repeatedly warned it wouldn't accept a hard border with Northern Ireland. Leo Varadkar, who is the Irish Prime Minister, subsequently said he believed the EU was funnelling Brexit talks into a situation where the whole of the UK would remain in alignment with the European Union over many regulations. I told you, I warned you, I said this way back in June last year. They were never going to allow the UK leave the European Union. This is about keeping the UK in the EU via the back door, or the side door, or ultimately the front door. So the Telegraph writes, a leaked version of the phrase alignment prompted the Democratic Unionist Party to block an earlier deal on Monday, last Monday, over fears that only Northern Ireland's rules would converge with the EU regulations in place in Ireland. They later agreed to a revised document which made clear that the full alignment would apply to the UK as a whole. Ta-da! You're going nowhere. You're going nowhere. We ain't leaving. Because as Icke has been saying in his books for decades now, everything comes down to these federal super states ultimately bleeding into one global government, because you can't control the many through hundreds and hundreds of sovereign independent countries doing what's best for their citizens, dear listener. You can't. God fucking forbid. God fucking forbid that every country decides to regulate itself in the interests of its citizens. God forbid that every country in the world issues debt-free currency outside of the control of the banks to its country to generate employment, to generate public service projects, to bring the country up. God forbid, you see, that countries act out of self-interest for their citizens, because then the cabal can't do anything. then the cabal can't decide to invade sovereign states and kill millions of people and displace millions more. And the European Union is central to this. So we can't have the UK fucking up our plans and walking out and inevitably thriving in a post-Brexit landscape, as the UK would, you see. We've demonstrated on this programme using economists on the left and on the right. I'm a bit of an economist myself, dear listener. Outside of the European Union, with absolutely no trade deal whatsoever, this country could thrive. There could be next to zero unemployment. That's just taking back fisheries alone. That's making your own steel. Making your own steel for public works and for private works in this country. It's as simple as that. That's just two things. Mining coal again. If the hypocritical flip-flopper Jeremy Corbyn, who doesn't believe in man-made climate change, and all these Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace and all these fuckers would fuck off mining coal again, getting our industry started again. Outside the European Union, this country could be a massive, massive success. No more borrowing from central banks to cripple the country with debt for generations to come. So the European Union can't have it. And the sinister cabal behind the European Union can't have it. They're never, ever allowing the UK leave. Forget about it. Paul Craig Roberts, former US Assistant Treasury Secretary, actually said, I've known Paul for years. He's one of the most mild-mannered, decent guys you've ever met in your life. Do you know what Paul Craig Roberts said to me on Thursday? Listen back. He said it's going to take violent revolution, Richie. He's had it up to the back fucking teeth of it, PCR. And I don't want to believe that. And I don't want people to be violent. But what else can people do? What will people... Because telling these fuckers through referendums, no more uncontrolled immigration, no more being governed by and being forced to acquiesce to laws written by unelected scumbags in Brussels, no. What more can people do? So they've done that. We're gone. We're out. We're finished. We're leaving. Well, you're not really. You're not really, because we're just going to ignore it. So what's left for people to do? Paul Craig Roberts thinks it's going to get violent. I hope it doesn't. I say non-violent civil disobedience. Maybe more on that a bit later on. So the Andrew Marr show was Brexit Central this morning. Brexit Central. Here's Scottish National Party MP and the leader of the Scottish National Party in Westminster, a man called Ian Blackwood. Now, the Scottish Nationals are calling for an alliance with Labour to win the next election and stop Brexit. Did I say this last year? That what jelly, gelatinous, gloopy shit Jeremy Corbyn would do was that he would eventually get in some sort of rainbow coalition with all of these other anti-democratic tyrants like the Scottish Nationals. So the Scottish Nationals are now calling for an alliance with Labour. Here's Ian Blackwood on Andrew Marr today.
What we want Labour to do is to get behind us and others that are arguing that we should stay in the single market and the customs union. If you look at the agreement that has come forward over the last few days about full alignment in order to deal with the Irish question, the simple answer to that is to stay within the single market and the customs union.
The Liberal Democrats want the same thing, but the problem with that is that during the referendum campaign, people were told time and time again that if they voted to leave the EU, they were leaving the single market, again and again and again.
Many people did say in that campaign, even on the Leave side, that there would be no necessity of leaving that single market in the customs union. And I think the fundamental point is that nobody voted in that referendum to become poorer. And it's about that threat which is becoming clearer to jobs and prosperity.
Right. The usual old bullshit from Ian Blackwood. This is what we want Labour to do. We'll join together and prosperity. And if we leave, it's going to destroy the jobs and all of that. Now, Andrew Marr, to be fair to him today, and he did all right today, Marr, across two interviews, one with Blackwood and one with Keir Starmer, which we'll hear in a minute. To be fair to Marr, he did his job. He reminds Blackwood that the electorate at large knew damn well what they were voting for.
But they did vote to leave the single market. I'm going to demonstrate to you why. Just hang on one second. Let's look at what people were saying during the referendum campaign itself.
The British public would be voting, if we leave, would be to leave the EU and leave the single market.
Should we come out the single market?
I think that is almost certainly would be the case, yes.
Do you want us to stay inside the single market? Yes or no?
No, we should be outside the single market.
I had Michael Gove in that chair and I said, after Brexit, will we be in the European single market, yes or no? And he said no.
And he was right.
So we won't be in
the
European single
market. Michael, yeah, absolutely.
We'd be out of the single market. That's the reality. Britain would be quitting the single market.
So you can't really say that voters didn't know what they were voting for. They were voting to leave the single market.
Right.
They did vote to leave the single market. Time and time again, I was asking people in that very chair, and they said the same thing on either side of the campaign, we're out of the single market. That's what people voted for. And therefore, it is breaking trust with the voters to say we should stay.
I don't accept that. I think there were an awful lot of untruths that were told in that campaign. Let's go back to the famous bus, the 350 million that was going to be invested
on
a weekly
basis.
No, it's not, because it's connected.
I've praised Andrew Marr. He could have hammered Blackwood there, and he didn't. When Blackwood said there are a lot of untruths told, that wasn't one of them. Everybody said, whether they were on the side of staying in or leaving, that whatever happens, if we do leave, we are out. Out, out, out means out. People knew damn well. People knew damn well. See, this is... And undemocratic scum like Ian Blackwood and his ilk. Tyrants. Tyrants. To say... As they did in Ireland some years ago, 52% of the people voted to leave. We're not having that. What a bullshitter he is. Just ignores the question and ignores Andrew Marr, who should have pressed him. But then Andrew Marr asks him a very good question. Kudos to Marr, he sometimes does. This is the next exchange.
Your real position for Scotland is that you want to stay inside the EU. Is that still the case now that the actual agenda of the EU is becoming more and more clear? Martin?
Yes, the actual agenda of the EU is becoming more and more clear. Fair play to Marr to have the fucking balls to say what he says next, because you can be damn sure his producers and his managers would not be happy with how he phrases this.
Martin Schulz, who's in negotiations with Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, very, very powerful figure there, said he wants a new constitutional treaty for a single state, a United States of Europe, explicitly, with an army and a treasury and a chancellor and all the rest of it, and anyone that doesn't like it will have to leave the EU. Is that really the kind of thing? There's no independence for Scotland there.
What we're doing is actually concentrating on what's in front of us at the moment.
Yeah, just ignore the question again, you see. He just ignores the question. He ignored it like Marr didn't say it. Martin Schulz, massive power broker in German politics at the moment, of course, is saying, we want a federal United States of Europe, single army, all of that. This is where it's going, and it's what David Icke was writing about back in the early 1990s. It's what I alluded to in my rant 5 minutes ago. That is what it's about. It's not about making sure that the continent never... descends into fighting amongst one another again. It's no protectionist, it's no safeguard against the European war after World War II and all of the other bullshit reasons they give you. It's consolidation and concentrating global power and money into the hands of smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller groups of people. That's what it's about. And what Schulz said the other day was just the truth for once. This is what the European Union is. And when confronted by this, Blackwood just ignores him.
Which is the negotiations that the UK are engaged in, and it's about protecting the interests
of our people. Nonsense! Answer the question. You want to leave the United Kingdom for Scotland to be independent, but you want to be part of a federal super state that is the European Union, with a single army. With your economic policies being written for you and dictated to you by the Troika, which is the European Central Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the European Union. That sounds wonderfully independent, that. You know, it's all very simple. Get out today. go to World Trade Organization terms, tell the Bank of England and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and every other private bank to fuck off, that from now on in, you will invent your own money out of thin air, rather than sell government bonds to capitalists and globalists and central banks who come back knowing full well you'll never be able to pay them back. And then they take your forests and your lakes and your power companies and everything else. So no, we'll have no more of that, thank you. But of course, that's not going to happen. This is the reason the European Union was dreamt up to begin with. It's the reason why every globalist in the world supported the Nazi regime in Germany. They didn't give a shit about Jews, about gypsies, about the disabled, about anybody else. They wanted the resources of planet Earth in a post-World War II Europe run by the Nazis. No coincidence this is coming from Germany. The Frankfurt Rothschilds, look back over this programme and others over the years, David's books, this is where it's coming from. Right? Tyrants. So Keir Starmer is the shadow Brexit secretary. Was also on with Andrew Marr today. And Andrew Marr tries to nail down what it is that the Labour Party actually wants after all of these negotiations are done. What post-Brexit world for the UK, what vision does the Labour Party have? What do they want? This is Keir Starmer.
So you want a new treaty giving us the full access and benefits to the single market and the customs union?
Yeah, it'll have to be a new treaty.
And you have said it's a bit like a Norway-style treaty for the 21st century.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, the two things that the EU has made it absolutely clear that involves is, one, you have to carry on paying some money in. Would you accept that?
Norway pays money in. They do it actually on a voluntary basis, not to the to the budget. But there may be...
Would you accept it?
There may have to be payments that have to be negotiated.
So you could negotiate payments in that thing. But the other thing, as you know, is the four freedoms.
The four freedoms.
Now, you have said again and again that freedom of movement is off the table. Yeah. It's after we leave, we've left, and all the rest of it. Can I ask you a different question? A subtly different question. Would maximal cross-channel migration in both directions be part of that negotiation or not?
Well, I mean, whatever the rules are, we'll have to be negotiating. You're absolutely right to push me on this because I've said freedom of movement can't stay the same. The status quo is not an option. That means it's got to be negotiated. And you and others push back against me and say you can't have the benefits of the single market and the customs union if you don't accept freedom. Yeah. Well, now, as a result of Friday, we've got the EU and the UK agreeing to an approach which says we must retain alignment if we're to solve the position in Northern Ireland. In other words...
So that means people moving across those borders in both directions.
Just let me make this point because, you know, what's said against me every time I put this argument up is you can't have that. It's fantasy. And therefore, you know, you've got to give up on the benefits of the single market and the customs.
Well, hang on a second. This is a non-negotiable position on the part of the European Union. It's non-negotiable. There's no half in, half out the single market. The EU says, and they will never bend, to access the single market, you must accept freedom of movement. It's a fact, right?
It's the single market and the customs union. What's clear from Friday is that the benefits of the single market and customs union are integral to Northern Ireland. And what's really important is that...
I just need to want to say one more time on this question of migration, people moving back and forth between the EU and the UK. It's not a kind of abstruse matter. It's about real people watching this programme. Would Labour, in that treaty, negotiate a system whereby people living in the EU could come and work here freely and vice versa? Yes
well,
or no?
Well, that would have to be negotiated, but the end of free movement doesn't mean no movement. Of course we would want people to come from the EU to work here. We'd want people who are here to go and work in the EU. The basis of that would have to be negotated. But
all right, easy movement if not free.
Yes, of course.
Right.
Yes,
okay,
of course. Really, you see, so this is the Labour Party position, basically. You know, they lie to your face, the Labour Party. They say that the referendum result must be respected. And whenever you see that gloopy, gelatinous pile of shit, Jeremy Corbyn, talking about it, it's all, we have to respect the referendum result. They're not respecting it. They have no intention of respecting it. None whatsoever. They're talking about an alliance with the Scottish National Party. And they're talking about keeping the European, keeping the UK in the European Union through the customs union and the single market and allowing free movement of people. Despite the fact 17.5 million people in this country clearly said we're fed up, we're sick to death of wages being driven down by a low-cost migrant workforce. It's destroying our livelihoods. Not only that, but it's putting unbelievable pressure on the NHS and on other public services. It is doing that, and that's why, not because we're xenophobic, bigoted, racist bastards, but because we're sick to death of it. And we're sick to death of our towns being transformed utterly, and our cities. We're sick of it. So it's got to stop. Right? But Rothschild Zionist bootlick Keir Starmer and his pals are not having it. Just in case we didn't get exactly what it is that he said, Marr doubled down on the Labour position with Keir Starmer.
After your negotiation with the EU, we carry on paying money in. We have very easy movement of people back and forward. So those people who voted to take our money back, those people who voted to cut immigration, will not be happy. And we are going to copy and paste and follow the EU regulations, even though we don't have a vote. That is, by any standards, the worst of all worlds. You have backed yourself into a very unpleasant corner.
Well, I really don't see how it's the worst of all worlds to be able to continue to trade successfully in Europe. I really don't see how it's the worst of all worlds to have a solution that works in Ireland. 3,600 people or so were killed, murdered, over 30 years in Northern Ireland. It's a very good book published earlier this year. Which
we're getting wildly off subject here.
Remember these dead. I mean, these are serious choices about the future
of course
Britain.
They are.
And having no hard border and being able to trade successfully with Europe in the future is a choice that we're entitled to make. We've got a choice.
We're going to take their regulations without a vote. We're going to carry on with a big migration back and forward. And we're going to pay money for the privilege. That has been described as being a vassal state of the EU.
How we negotiate that agreement with the EU is a matter still for negotiation. It doesn't mean it's cut and paste.
What a gutless bastard Starmer is. Just say yes, Andrew, because you've already said it. You've already outlined it. Just say yes. That's right. You've summed it up perfectly. We'll take regulations from the EU. There will be no limit to migration. We'll open the doors and we'll stay in the single market. Just admit it. We're going to respect the referendum result. No, you're not. Liar. My friend and colleague Jean-Anne Crowley is interested in the rise of Bitcoin. I'm not sure there has been a rise in Bitcoin. I know there's been a substantial increase in the coverage given to it by the media. That's definitely true, that. But in terms of people using it, I wonder, has there been a big rise in it? I don't know. But where I do agree with Jean-Anne, she says to me that she's been attempting to study it and she thinks it's a "will you come into my parlour," said the spider to the fly. You know, 'tis the prettiest little parlour that you ever did spy moment to get us all into a no cash system where every transaction you ever do or make is noted and they can block you from the blockchain anytime they choose. Do you remember that economist's predictive cover from 1988, says Jean-Anne? One world currency to arrive in 2018. I wonder if Bitcoin is the start of it. Now, I sympathise with her point of view there. About a year and a half ago, I got into a Twitter exchange with somebody about Bitcoin. And somebody was saying to me that I should be promoting it. First of all, why should I promote it? I said, why would I promote it? You know, because it's the antidote to the system. And I said at the time, it isn't the antidote to the system. It's the fucking system. It is the system. It is crypto cashless currency. It is the essence of the cashless society. Why would I want to support it? It's not the banks. It is. I'm sure there's some fairy story about who came up with Bitcoin and when. like the fairy story we have about Zuckerberg and Facebook, and like the fairy story we have about search engines. But for me, Bitcoin is dangerous because it is a cashless currency that enables anybody at any time that has the power to do so to turn you off. To just go, you're gone. Your wallet is gone. You're out of funds. So I've no time for it. And I took some flack at the time. Oh, Max Keiser used to be your friend. Yeah, Max Keiser used to be my friend. I used to interview him in Spain until I asked him live on the radio one night, Max, why are you telling people about the values of Bitcoin while you've got interests in and you directly profit from the sale of Bitcoin or the trading of it? Max didn't like it. These guys in the Truth or Industrial Complex, they don't like when you challenge them. So we don't speak anymore. I'm not saying that Max Keiser is a fraud or he's corrupt or anything. I'm not. But he was extolling the virtues of Bitcoin 3, 4, 5 years ago on radio around Europe while he was profiting from any transactions in it. He was involved in a company. Because I always get this. Oh, Keiser! Max Keiser is a comedian. A fucking comedian. Right? And he's quite funny. But don't be buying into all this shit. Oh, Keiser says Bitcoin, so it must be. All right then. No. Cashless society. The ability for the establishment to turn your life off. You're gone. Fuck. You're gone. So whether or not it's going to be the Bitcoin will become some sort of world currency, I don't know. Maybe it will. But I certainly have no time for it. You know, I would believe strongly in, at the moment anyway, in continuing to do transactions in cash as best as you possibly can. I got caught short at the vets a few weeks back, a couple of weeks back. But generally, I try and have a few bob on me. Went to a concert in the city last night by myself. I didn't drink, but I had a little burger at one of the Christmas markets. I had a couple of bottles of water and I had cash. Try not to use this contactless thing, which of course they want us, more and more and more they want us being contactless so that without even a second thought, now it's on the phones of course, you can hold your phone to a machine. It's madness. And I think Bitcoin is a part of that madness. Look, it's 19 minutes to the top of the hour, I'm way behind. And I want to talk about grooming gangs and big story in the papers today, and we'll do that after these messages.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now. So read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper?
characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the program. Just to clarify about Kaiser. Kaiser has done some very interesting things over the years, and I don't have anything against him. And like I said, I don't think he is a fraud or anything like it. I just challenged him way back about extolling the virtues of Bitcoin and not being a bit more forthcoming about the fact that he had, you know, a lot to gain from people using Bitcoin at that particular time. That's all it was. He didn't like it and threw his ties out of the pram, and that's fair enough. I couldn't give a shit, you know. I don't care about egos, and I have no time for egos and for divas. But anyway, that's the way it is. But Kaiser's done some good stuff over the years. There's been a lot of comment on this, and there was a load of comments on vets and the ridiculous charging by vets for follow-up visits. You know, you bring a dog or a cat in for the initial problem. They give you a treatment and they say, come back and we'll see how the treatment has gone. And then they charge you consultancy fees. Well, there's been a lot of people. Stephen Guinness. Stephen, how are you? It's been a long time since I heard from you, Stephen. I thought you'd abandoned the Richie Allen Show. Stephen Guinness, you know, said that Vets for Pets did the same thing. A number of you tweeting that it's happened to you, so thank you for that. Hi to Spirit Samba, these are the damned Susan. How you doing, Susan? Who says, surely the Remainers can see now that, surely they can't be that blind, they can see what the European Union is. Deborah tweets, two fingers up to 17.4 million voters, but we knew it was coming, no surprises there. Of course we did, Deborah, absolutely. Hi to Ricky Emmett as well. Massive amount of tweets came in today. And a lot of you very interested in that vet thing. I thought you might be, you see. Although I have had a couple of emails come in criticising me for having a go at Noel Fitzpatrick, the super vet. Fuck off! It's going to be very expensive. It's going to be £7,000. How about, Noel, do the 2-hour operation and charge £500 or £600? How about that? Don't get me started. Caroline loves this, the super vet. I can't stand him. Can't stand him. His manner, his demeanour, his attitude. He's probably a genius, but he's so far up his own fucking arse. His head is coming out of his own mouth. I'm a genius, so I can charge thousands and thousands of people. People who don't have that kind of money and they're desperate for an operation on their dog. I'm going to charge them thousands. How about just, how many mansions do you fucking need before you say enough is enough? All right, love, I'll tell you, I'll do the operation for £600. I'll take £200 an hour and the materials will cost me £200. How about that? £200. That's not bad, that, is it? Eh? The super vet. That's genuine, that. Properly pisses me off, that, you know. Everybody worship at the altar of Noel Fitzpatrick. I wonder, is it like Gordon Ramsay with Fitzpatrick? I wonder, do all of these wonderful little gadgets that he puts inside animals, did they break down after 2 or 3 fucking days? But there's no follow-up program, so you never know. It's like all these restaurants Ramsay has saved, and then 3 weeks later they go out of business anyway. after listening to Ramsay's bullshit for a week, screaming at them and abusing them and giving them a shitty, tacky makeover. Wonderful. And then Ramsay goes away and they're all kissing and waving at him going down the street. Next thing you find out, the restaurant is gone. I wonder, is it the same with the Supervet? The Supervet. Ah, look, I'm sure he's very talented. Christ almighty. I shouldn't stay out so late. Where was I? Anyway. So anyway, there's been a lot. There's a lot of comment on Vets. And Bitcoin. A number of you believe that Bitcoin is the system. Right. Do you know, there used to be an unwritten rule that Paddy doesn't criticise Paddy. I couldn't give a shit about that. Let's see. Where was I? Yeah, this is important. Right, let's move on then. I didn't give you the Sunday Mail, the Mail on Sunday headline. It's Brexit. There's a story on the Sunday Times about a skyscraper bribe scandal. The Sunday Times claims a businessman who has close ties to the Labour Party asked property developers who wanted to build a skyscraper for a £2 million bribe. Lawyers for the businessman said he denied any wrongdoing. But that's a bit cheeky, because what does close ties to the Labour Party mean? Does he know somebody in the Labour Party? This is typical bullshit journalism. You know, he's either in the Labour Party or he's not. So if he asked for a bribe and he's caught, he should be prosecuted. Don't mention the Labour Party or the Conservative Party unless he's actually working for them. And there's a very good story on the Sunday Mirror. The front page, unusually, the headline is Santa's Slaves. David has been talking a lot about this over the last couple of years, not just this year. Amazon is paying delivery drivers less than the minimum wage, and staff are working 14-hour shifts without a break in the Amazon factories. What bastards they are, Amazon. I will not use Amazon to buy anything, ever. I know you'll say there's a paradox there, because people depend on the jobs and all of that. They should not be treating people like that. They've got this ad running at the moment which shows this wonderful, wonderful place to work and all this lovely music and everybody's running around with a smile on their face. But documentaries have been made with hidden cameras which show the conditions are disgraceful for people working in their warehouses. So fuck Amazon. A lot of bad language for a Sunday morning. So Sky News have a report today based on the think tank Quilliam. Quilliam, the think tank, have been looking into Asian grooming gangs. This is the Sky News report. It's very, very interesting. We've covered this on the programme lately. Listen to Sky News today.
It's a problem that's plagued several UK cities. Gangs of predominantly British Pakistani men targeting vulnerable white young women and girls.
On a daily basis, I was being beaten, raped, and emotionally I just completely shut down.
Sammy Woodhouse was one of 1,400 children sexually exploited in Rotherham alone. She chose to waive her anonymity to campaign to stop it happening.
White girls were viewed, as I say, just as a piece of meat, as though where they're just a sex object, that, you know, they can do anything towards us, that we deserve it. There's no respect there. They don't view us as people, really.
High-profile cases like Rotherham have generated negative headlines about the Asian community. But the most recent case in Newcastle, where 17 men and one woman were convicted of nearly 100 offences, changed the debate. The judge said it wasn't racially motivated. One MP writing to the Attorney General calling for a review. Think tank the Quilliam Foundation has investigated this issue in a bid to add a strong voice from the British Pakistani community to the debate.
Right, so what have Quilliam, the think tank, found? Now, I don't like Quilliam. I used to speak to some of their representatives. It's an absolute mired in the system think tank, right? However, they found that 84% of all people convicted since 2005 for the specific crime of gang grooming were Asian. So gang grooming, if gang grooming is going on, 84% of it is happening through or in the Asian community. Now, the Quilliam Foundation found that the demographic background of those who exploit youngsters in a paedophile ring was different. According to the most recent figures released in 2012 by the National Crime Agency's Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command, 100% of child sex offenders in paedophile rings were white. Now, we talk a lot about paedophile rings, of course. So 100% of sex offenders in paedophile rings are white. Type 1 offenders, those who targeted their victims based on their vulnerability, which is the equivalent of grooming gangs, right? 75% of type 1 offenders were Asian ethnicity, whereas 100% of type 2 offenders, the paedophile rings, were white. Now, here's Anita Prem. She's a human rights activist, and she spoke on Sky News today about this and about the racial aspects of it and how it was maybe not investigated because of cultural sensitivities. Have a listen.
But when you look at paedophile rings, in the main, they're mainly white British men that act alone, so they're using the internet or finding different ways of doing it. But when we're looking at the gangs, 84% in the report that's come out are Asian, Pakistani-born men, or come from Pakistani heritage. So that's a really worrying figure. And what we need to understand what the reason is behind that. And we need to take away the racial sensitivity around this and deal with the problem of young children, young girls in particular, being abused, sexually abused and raped by these gangs of men. Well, they're saying that that isn't along racial lines, and that has been challenged by many groups. But the majority of girls that have been abused and that have come forward are white, very vulnerable girls that come from quite impoverished backgrounds. Many of them have been groomed by being offered alcohol or presents or gifts by these men. And they do seem to be working in very large groups. So people in the community must know it's going on, and they seem to be shielding this. Also, there seems this level of political correctness that we can't really deal with this head on, but we have to. We have to put the most vulnerable girls and young people at the forefront of our minds and take the worry about where these perpetrators come from to one side and actually deal with the problem head on.
Yeah, it shouldn't matter where the perpetrators come from. It shouldn't matter. You know, abusing children and girls is certainly not an Asian or a Pakistani problem. It isn't, obviously. But that wasn't investigated properly because of the worry that police forces would be seen as biased and racist. And we know all this, but it goes a bit deeper than that. We'll come to that in a second. So that was Anita Prem. Now, former Chief Crown Prosecutor for the Northwest, Nazir Afzal. Now, we've mentioned him quite a bit on the programme. He was invited on the programme, but I never heard back from him. Now, Nazir Afzal talks about the Quilliam findings, but also about how the far right in the UK, how the far right uses things like this report from Quilliam to recruit members. That is interesting. Have a listen.
The reality is the far right use this as their number one recruiting tool. They use this issue to recruit more far-right activists. And that's why we need to do something about it. British white men, they tend to work individually. They tend to work online where they groom, and they are the majority of perpetrators. But when it comes to British Pakistani men or Asian men, they tend to do it in groups of this nature.
Yes, and it's important to note that the far-right will use this. It's what they do. You know, and I've spoken to people on the far-right, and I've spoken to people on the right and the alt-right, and those on the far right will use this kind of report to demonise Muslims. It's as simple as that. However, they wouldn't have been able to use it to demonise Muslims and to scapegoat Muslims if the UK police had done their job. And by not doing their job, the UK police let down vulnerable young girls in Rochdale, Rotherham and elsewhere, but they also let down the Pakistani community in those places and those cities by not doing their jobs, because it gives ammunition to the My Dot is the Only Dot Brigade, the Black and White Brigade, no pun intended. Gives them ammunition. Oh, the Muslims. Right? Now, we've talked a lot on this programme about why the police didn't do their jobs, and it is well worth listening once again to the wonderful former detective Maggie Oliver, who of course came to national attention this year talking about her story. She was in the heart of Rochdale dealing with this, investigating this, you know, bringing these cases to the to her superiors at Greater Manchester Police and also to the Director of Public Prosecutions, but she couldn't get anywhere. Now, it's not just the police and cultural sensitivity, at least Maggie Oliver told us a few weeks back on the programme.
Perhaps in the very early days, I laid the responsibility for not properly investigating the allegations of victims in Rochdale, I initially thought that failure lay perhaps with one or two supervisors on the job. That's how naive I was at the start of this journey. But I think that the last 5 years, I have, you know, it's been on my mind for part of every day for all those 5 years. And the first 2 years I was really ill. I couldn't sleep. I didn't know what was going on. I did question my own sanity because I could not believe what I was seeing. But what has transpired in the past 5 years, you know, common sense tells you that this was not a problem of Greater Manchester Police. You look around the country, you know, whether you look at Rotherham, at Rochdale, at Oxford, Telford, Doncaster now, every one of those cities and areas have now had cases involving serious grooming and serious sexual abuse of vulnerable white children, and the perpetrators or the offenders in those trials have been predominantly Pakistani men. Now, I don't believe it's a coincidence that those cases are now starting to come to the forefront. I believe that they were suppressed or covered up, if you want to say that, at a national level for a long time. And that is my personal belief. You know, I can't prove what's happened in Doncaster, but my personal opinion, I think it is, I would find it unbelievable that this desire to cover up this particular kind of crime hasn't come from the government, whichever government that is. It isn't a party political point.
No, and she made sure, and in other interviews, that was her speaking with me a few weeks ago. She's based in Altrincham, an amazing woman, Maggie Oliver. So if the Home Office around the country was putting police forces off investigating grooming gangs, why were they doing that? See, this is the $64 million question. And obviously I asked Maggie Oliver, why did she think that? But of course, quite rightly, she said, well, I can't speak to that. So why were the, or was the Home Office responsible for law and order in the United Kingdom, currently headed up by a woman called Amber Rudd, but previously headed up by one Theresa May? Why was the Home Office telling the police forces of these places to leave this alone? Your guess is as good as mine. All I can do is speculate. I think it's probably multifaceted. Again, it's probably not black and white. It's not just one single thing. But I have no doubt that one of the facets is don't rock the apple cart when it comes to people's perceptions of the multicultural society that we must live in because it has been decreed. That's certainly part of it, I have no doubt. My mate Kate Coley says to me on Twitter, Richie, surely the Pakistani men are the ones who are racist. They only target white girls, that's racism. Yeah, of course you can say that. And why shouldn't somebody allege that they're racist? They picked on vulnerable, poor girls with difficulties, with alcohol addiction problems, with drug problems. Girls who came from, you know, homes that weren't the best in terms of they didn't have supportive homes. So of course these men could be charged with, or it could be said that they were racially aggravated crimes. In fact, we've had people on the programme talking about it who said that they see these white women as nothing, you know, as some sort of subspecies. They see them as fallen from grace because they're out on their own and they're in pubs, you know, playing pool, drinking, hanging around. God love them because they have nothing else to do and they don't have much going for them. So Kate's right to say that. But police people on the ground, they felt that they would come in for criticism of targeting, right? Of profiling effectively. But Maggie Oliver said, yes, maybe, but there was a directive coming from on high not to get into it. Question is why? Right? And I reckon, you know, selling the European Union, super state agenda, and the world ultimately to be put initially into four or five of these big zones, David calls them ultimately human settlement zones, all part of then ultimately pushing us towards the single world government agenda. Multiculturalism and forcing that on people and forcing them to accept it is a big part of that agenda and has been for many, many generations. And we have to get, you know, it through our heads that Muslims, Sikhs, people from Eastern Europe, Christians coming from the Philippines and God knows where, they're not the problem. It's easy to see them as the problem because you have these things happening on a scale, admittedly, you know. And you see the impact that it's had on public services, on the NHS. And it is easy to hate and to despise the dark-skinned man or dark-skinned woman. But it's not their fault. And this is what the Paul Joseph Watson's at InfoWars, who's been backing Israel to the hilt last week and over the weekend. Of course he would, because they backed Donald Trump to the hilt, didn't they? Nothing but salesmen for the far right and the alt-right. That's what InfoWars has become. That's what these guys either can see and choose to ignore it because it doesn't sell well, or they can't see. Yes, there is a massive issue. But who has... I said this to Anne-Marie Waters last week. Who, from the For Britain party, who is responsible for it? Who and why? But you see, tragically, people coming from difficult socio-economic backgrounds, people who struggle, and I'm not for a minute going to suggest that, you know, people with less money than me are less intelligent than me. They're not. They're not. But the stresses of the hardship of people who are struggling, who can't get ahead, it's very difficult for them to distinguish between the Muslim man and woman or the Sikh man and woman who they think and they believe is responsible for their circumstances because they can't get a decent job, because their benefits are being cut, or because they can't get an appointment in the hospital. It's difficult for them to look beyond. And I saw this in Waterford City many, many years ago when I was in radio there, and there was a lot of immigration came into Waterford from African countries, and the phone-in shows on our station used to be full of people who were having it bad, you know, blaming them, blaming the other. Of course, it's what the system wants. That's why multiculturalism is forced on us to begin with. So while we're killing one another over immigration, and of course, we're right to be concerned about immigration, but while we're killing one another over it, hating one another, the tyrannical system that's behind Agenda 20, Agenda 30, that's behind everything else we talk about, the wars, the mass extermination of people all over the world, they carry on. They carry on regardless. We hate one another. Fucking Muslims. It's the fucking Muslims. No, it's not. It's the fucking Jews. No, it's not the Jews either. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny cartel of people through a number of global organisations, through control of central banks. That's who it is. It's not the fucking Muslims or the fucking Jews or the fucking anybody else. But we have the alt-right now, and we have the progressives, and this is all we get in the media. It's all we get in the independent media, which, as I constantly say on this program, is worse than the mainstream media. The independent media is largely garbage. People selling other people what they desperately want to hear, telling them what they already know. and telling them that either Donald Trump is the answer or Bernie Sanders is the answer or Jeremy Corbyn is the answer. Bullshit. Bullshit. The vast majority of the independent media won't go where the information leads you. But they'll go wherever the money is. And InfoWars has very cleverly noticed there is a massive market, a pro-gun, pro-free market economics, anti-Muslim populace. And they've said, that's where our base is, so we'll tell them what they want to hear. Paul Joseph Watson, half-baked autodidact at best, fucking idiot, knows what Israel is, how it behaves, what it does, knows who's behind it, can differentiate between Zionism and Judaism, but that doesn't sell. Trump sells. So that's what we'll give to our pro-gun, pro-free market economics, pro-1776 patriotism. We'll sell that. And that's your media today. Sadly, that's your independent media. And don't say, it's not just InfoWars, it's across the board. We had so-called independent media organisations here in the UK, which we call mainstream light, telling people to vote for Corbyn before the last election. Come on. You know? Time to get real about what the media is. But that's what the media, both the indie media and the alternative and the mainstream media, that's how they sell multiculturalism. That's how they sell it. They actually sell it by appearing to be against it, paradoxically. Because we never look to who's behind it and why. Well, we do. And one or two others do, but the vast majority of independent media doesn't go anywhere near it. That's it for Sunday View. Thanks for listening to it. I've gone way over the time. It's supposed to be an hour long. Drat. Hope you're going to enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thanks so much for listening to the programme. I'm going to chill out because the future Mrs. Allen is away visiting France, having a lovely time in Nancy in the northeast of France with her family in the Alsace beautiful region. I stayed back home to work for you. No, I didn't. I stayed back home to work for me. We will see each other again tomorrow at 7 p.m. UK time. That's Monday's Richie Allen Show, live in association with DavidIke.com. This will be on podcast real soon and on YouTube a short time after. Have a great Sunday. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.